Well, obviously, the Olympics has been on everyone's mind. It was on Dana's mind this week. How many of you have been watching the Olympics? Part of them, all of them, some. Who could possibly watch all of them? You'd have to be a real night owl and glued to the television and or your marvelous electronic device, whichever version you have. It's been quite a spectacle. Every 4 years it comes around, and as Dana was bringing out, it's been quite an exciting run. Lots of stories have come out from the bizarre to the normal and everything in between. I'd like to take just a moment to review the history of the Olympic Games. You might find this interesting. As is so often the case, many human endeavors and events that are a part of our modern-day life had an ancient origin, and in many cases, those origins are linked to pagan gods and goddesses. And in this case, true to form, you find, of course, the Olympic Games originating in Greece, and in fact, they are connected with the great god Zeus. And so I have here an account that I took from the website called Olympic.org, which claims to be the official website of the Olympic movement. Now, I don't know what the Olympic movement is. It could be something apart from the Olympic committee, but and regardless, here is a brief history of the Olympics. According to historical records, the first ancient Olympic Games can be traced back to 776 B.C., which is probably before most of you were born. Is that correct? They were dedicated to the Olympian gods and were staged on the ancient plains of Olympia. They continued for nearly 12 centuries until Emperor Theodosius decreed in 393 A.D. that all such pagan cults be banned. So it really had transformed itself into quite a pagan orgy of sorts, and it was actually banned by the emperor in 393 A.D. And it gradually evolved into something far more than it originally started to be. It was originally a basic foot race, but then it grew even in ancient times, and in fact expanded even in modern times to include such sports as ping pong and other sports that you might not think of as necessarily strenuous. But when you see ping pong players stand about 30 feet from the edge of the table and return serves, you begin to realize that, or volleys rather, you begin to realize that, ooh, this is not like the ping pong I play in my basement. This is a little different. But nonetheless, the games did kind of evolve over the centuries. And at one point, all contestants had to remove all clothing items in order to compete. So you can imagine what it became in those early years. Thankfully, we aren't subjected to that in our modern times. However, beach volleyball does press the envelope to a certain extent. Olympia, the site of the ancient Olympic Games, is in the western part of the Peloponnese, which, according to Greek mythology, is the island of Pelops, the founder of the Olympic Games. Imposing temples, votive buildings, elaborate shrines, and ancient sporting facilities were combined in a site of unique natural and mystical beauty. Olympia functioned as a meeting place for worship and other religious and political practices as early as the 10th century B.C., and of course that was about 300 years before the Olympics even started. The central part of Olympia was dominated by the majestic temple of Zeus, with the temple of Hera parallel to it. I guess that was his female wife, the goddess Hera, and the god Zeus. The Olympic Games were closely linked to the religious festivals of the cult of Zeus, but were not an integral part of the rite. So that's a little bit of the history of the Olympics. And, of course, it's a far different spectacle and event and activity today than it was all those many years ago. But it is interesting, is it not, that for centuries men and women have competed to determine among us to determine who among us is the fastest, the strongest, the best at virtually any given sport or endeavor. Competitive sports have played a major role in the history of the human race. And in fact, that's even a little play on words, isn't it? Because all of us are humans, as humans, are in fact in a race. And we're going to talk about that a little bit this morning. And hopefully I'll dovetail with what Dana gave in his excellent sermonette. In fact, it's probably not a stretch to state that for some, training to be crowned the best has become their life, their religion, if you will. I have here a story, for an example, of Carrie Ann Payne. She's considered to be the world's best open water swimmer. You might wonder, what's open water swimming? Is that opposed to closed water? Well, open water swimming is swimming outside of the pool, obviously, in some kind of a natural body of water. And we're going to read a little bit about this grueling sport. Carrie Ann Payne is finally looking forward to the wedding she had to delay for 2 years to train for the Olympics. I want you to listen to some of the dedication here and commitment that is illustrated by Carrie. Incidentally, I'll give you the results of her race. This was written before she came in fourth place. She was a medal contender for the Brits. She was picked to possibly take the gold, but she lost by less than 1/2 second. She missed getting a medal. The Beijing silver medalist, who was tipped for gold in today's 10-kilometer open water swim in the Serpentine, which is a body of water in the city of London. Again, this is written by a British publication. That's why it says she was tipped for gold. Well, she was picked. That's apparently a British phrase. She will now have time to put the finishing touches on her other big day. The date is set for September 15, and Payne has managed to do some organizing for the couple's big day during breaks from the training pool. She is engaged to another Olympic swimmer, David Carey, age 30. Both of them have been training for the Olympics, so they decided to delay their wedding 2 years. She said, "I enjoy organizing things. I've already got the dress and a ring. I've had a lot of support from my family and from David's family as well." Now think about the things that she's giving up here. They may not sound like too much to us, but when you think about it, it's quite a bit. The South African-born open water swimmer of the year, that's Carrie, said that she had missed out on a social life and important family events because of her training schedule, which also meant that she had to develop mental strategies to stop herself from feeling lonely. During training, Payne awoke at dawn every day. At dawn every day. He might say, "Oh, that's nothing. I get up at dawn every day. I can't sleep anymore, so I get up." Well, here's what she does after she gets up. She completes nearly 45 miles of pool training every week. Let's see. That's almost 7 miles a day. Now, I have 7 cups of coffee when I get up at dawn. She said the key was doing things at the times when you least want to do it. "There will never be a time in my life when I want to get up at dawn and swim 7 miles. You definitely feel like a better person and a better swimmer after you've done it. Getting up in the mornings early, having the right diet." I mean, everything about her life was geared to this race and to swimming, open water swimming. It meant missing family events and racing on weekends and swimming all week. "They understand that is her family. I can't go to family parties, and I've missed both my niece's births, which was really difficult." Well, these are important life plateaus and events, and you don't want to miss them, but she gave them up. "I'm not a big partier, but I like going to concerts. I just can't do it because I need to be in bed by 9:30 p.m. and up by 6:30 a.m. Of her racing events, she said, "I'm always thinking about who's behind me when the next feeding station or turning point is coming." At the 2008 Beijing Olympics, Payne, who lives in Stockport, won silver in the open water event but failed to progress in the pool events. For the London Games, she decided to stick with her strengths and race outside, pitted against 24 other women. They were swimming six laps of the Hyde Park Pond called the Serpentine. Dodging the ducks and reeds, hazards less dangerous and stomach-churning than some of her earlier encounters in her swimming career. In Australia, she faced jellyfish the size of dinner plates and shark nets, while in China, she had to avoid the carcasses of dead dogs floating in 86-degree water. Now, in open swimming, one of the reasons she lost the race, in fact, by her own admission, she said, I'm more of a lover than a fighter. Now, you throw 24 women in the water, and they do, what was it? How many laps? Six laps around the pond. They are kicking, and they are stroking, and they are fighting. She was punched in the face several times. She felt intentionally, you're kicked, you're gouged, you're dodging, you're just in a knot. She tried to break out from the crowd, but couldn't do it. That was her normal strength. That's why she was tipped to be number one, but she couldn't break out of the crowd. Several yellow flags during the race. In other words, that's not nice, but it never changed the outcome. So it's a brutal event. And here she is, number four, and yet think about it, training for a whole year and then falling behind, not winning the medal, one half second behind the third place finisher. Quite the commitment and dedication, is it not? And you know, I wonder if the Apostle Paul had something like this in mind when he wrote under inspiration 1 Corinthians 9, where Dana took us earlier, and where we'll spend a little more time this morning. We've already run through those verses. We're going to key in on some of this. Verse 24, do you not know that those who run in a race all run? Now, I've seen very few races where people stop running. I've seen a couple. My son was in a race once. He pushed himself beyond his human capability for the first about 300 yards, and he had another 100 yards to go, and he just could not make it. He didn't know how to pace himself. So there have been a few instances of that, but you don't see people running a race, pulling out of the race, unless they're injured. In other words, we're all in this race. We are all running. And I think the metaphor is clear, as Dana brought out. We're going to bring out some additional points for us to consider. It's a metaphor and an analogy, if you will, that the Apostle Paul used, and I'd like to use it this morning to see what lessons we can learn from these Olympic athletes when it comes to running our personal race as Christians, because that's exactly what we're doing. There is a start, there is a finish, and there is a prize. But guess what? We have to finish the race. We have to finish the race. And there are some other elements of physical racing, Olympic racing, that apply to our spiritual race that I hope you'll find interesting and helpful this morning. So let's examine three aspects of the training regimen of Olympic champions and the way they apply themselves to their sport, and see if we can't apply these three lessons to our own lives, to our own race for the kingdom of God. Now, the first point I'd like to emphasize is the importance of training and preparation. And, of course, I don't think any of us would argue that you cannot go directly from your recliner to the center podium at the Olympic Games and see the American flag drop and sing along and receive your gold medal. There's something that has to happen between the recliner and the podium. And that's a lot of work and a lot of energy and a lot of effort. And the thing is, as Carrie said, It's a matter of doing the things you know you have to do when you really don't want to do them. And of course, that's very close to a definition of character, isn't it? There are many things that we don't want to do, we know are good for us, we know we should do them, and it takes stamina and determination, preparation, all of those things to get ourselves in shape to run our race. You know, in most cases, for Olympic athletes, their life becomes their sport for 4 years, just as Kerry described it. From the time they get up until they collapse into bed at night, they are in a constant state of training and conditioning. Kerry said no to marriage, to parties, to activities, to family events. She said no to a lot of things. What are we willing to say no to? It's worth thinking about, isn't it? And the longer we run the race, perhaps the less we realize as Christians that we're really in a race, that there is a finish line. And in fact, as Paul says, everyone runs. One receives the prize, and it's important for us to understand that. Olympic athletes display a willingness to sacrifice in order to achieve their goal. And they recognize that without that sacrifice, they may not be in shape to truly compete, and their lack of commitment may result in a silver medal, a bronze medal, or no medal. Because guess what? What color medal are all of the Olympic athletes seeking to achieve? The gold medal. That's what they want. And anything less seems to be a great disappointment. Did you see the Russian gymnast burst into tears when she received the silver medal and lost by 0.012 points or something like that? That close. You're either the best or you're the worst, it seems. The silver is not quite good. Well, I'm telling you, even I could not compete with the silver medalist. I'm sure I couldn't. What they can do on that balance beam, or on the uneven parallel bars, or on the floor exercise, unbelievable. I get disoriented doing a somersault. In fact, I get on my back to stretch, and if I get up too soon, I'm a little bit dizzy. I'm not there. It's amazing to what limits the human body can be pushed and stretched. And we've been doing this for centuries to ourselves. And what did Paul say? All of this for a corruptible crown. And throw Michael Phelps in the pool about 40 years from now. I'm sure he'll still be able to swim. But what happens physically? We deteriorate. Our times are not going to be as good at 50 as they were at 15. That's just the way it goes. No matter what kind of high potency vitamin you take, no matter what regimen you follow, ask Jack LaLanne. But you can't ask him. He's not around anymore. He hung on for a long time. But eventually we die, because that's what things physical do. We are striving for a spiritual crown. A gold medal in the Olympics is a wonderful achievement, but it really is paled into virtual insignificance by the golden crown that you and I are racing for. Think about it. Think about it in the context of these Olympic athletes. And you know, for the most part, these athletes take their pursuit of gold very seriously. They take full responsibility for themselves. They are scrupulous about their diet, their exercise regimen, the amount of sleep they get. For 4 years, they are driven by the single-minded purpose of becoming the best. And incidentally, just as an aside, their attention to their physical health and to their diet and sleep and exercise, you know, that has a relevant place in a Christian's life. You can be a much more effective Christian if you're in good health, if you watch your diet. God is concerned about what you eat. That's why He gave you a list of good things to eat, a list of things that aren't so good to eat. Clean and unclean meats and other things, you know, that are processed foods, and all of the things that we eat and drink and breathe and rub on our bodies and take into our bodies All of these things are not that good for us, and we need to be concerned about our health and our strength and our stamina and our endurance, even on a physical level, so that we can achieve more spiritually. Now, if you want to enter the Olympics, that you can do that, but I'm talking spiritually, and for most of us, we're not going to be in the Olympics. Now, let's face it, even though we might have dreamt at one time, it's not going to happen. But there are lessons we can learn from these athletes. 1 Corinthians 9, verse 27. In relationship to this point, Paul writes, "But I discipline my body and bring it into subjection, just like those athletes." And you see that as Dana was describing Michael Phelps, the guy was born to swim. I wonder if he has gills. I wonder if he has webbed feet. I mean, he just is born to swim. My body shape, I don't know what it's born to do, but it's not born to swim. It's amazing. And I'm sure he had to discipline his body. He had those natural talents and characteristics and traits, but he had to discipline his body. Paul says he disciplined his body, and he brought it into subjection. So are we willing to discipline ourselves and bring our human nature into subjection? Are we willing to make the kinds of sacrifices in our own lives that these Olympic athletes have made? This is what Paul is trying to bring out here. I'm convinced it's pretty clear, isn't it? That's why he brings out the analogy. We're all running. We're all competing. All run, he said. But only one receives the prize. And we are to run in such a way that you might obtain it. So we're all running, whether we know it or not. Whether or not we're physically exhausted is immaterial. We are all in the race. Matthew 24, verse 13, very familiar. He that shall endure to the what? End shall be saved, or wins the race, right? He that shall endure to the end, the same shall be saved. What are you and I willing to endure? And are we willing to endure to the end? Are we tempted to stop running, to drop out of the race, to visit the concession stand and stay there? You cannot win the race if you stop running. We must endure to the finish line, and that's where Dana brought out the need for encouragement. And his parents encouraged him, and that gave him the boost that he needed. It's funny, children can pick their parents' voices out of the din and the cacophony of the cheering crowds every time. And there are times when you think, why am I even going to these events? My children don't even know I'm here. Oh, yes, they do. Oh, yes, they do. And they know when other interested adults are there as well. Notice in Matthew 19, this young man wanted to run. He was talking to the coach of the team. I'm going to create my own metaphor here. Matthew 19. The young man said, look, I want to be on your team. I want to run the race. I've done this. I've done that. What else can I do to be on the team? What else do I have to do? Well, you got to keep the commandments. Well, I've done all of that. Now, what else is there? Anything else? Yeah, if you really want to be on the team, this is what you're lacking. You're going to have to go and sell all that you have, give it to the poor, and you will have treasure in heaven, verse 21. Come and follow me. Follow me. Christ ran the race. He finished the race. Paul finished his race. Christians everywhere down through history have finished their race. This young man wanted to race. The coach gave him the criteria. He walked away sorrowful. He could not give up his riches. Not that he had to become a pauper, but he had to put God first and his riches second. And what did God promise? If we do that, all of these things will be added unto you. But we have to make that conscious decision to sacrifice and to give up whatever comes between us and God and His commandments, His way of life. Whatever hinders us in the race, we've got to get rid of it. Whatever prevents us from our training regimen being fulfilled and accomplished, we have got to toss it out. We can't be His disciple, we can't be on His team, and we're not going to enter the race. So consider the young man. He wanted to run. He wanted to win. But he couldn't make the sacrifice or exercise the discipline necessary to do so. I hope none of us will ever find ourselves in that situation. Now, point number two. Run to win. Run to win. You must run your Christian race with the intent of winning. Let's go back to 1 Corinthians 9 again. 1 Corinthians 9. Verse 24. Do you not know that those who run in a race all run, but one receives the prize? Run in such a way that you may obtain it. In a race, there's only one winner or first place finisher. Paul said that it was possible for us to run our Christian race in vain. Do we realize that? Because you're in the race doesn't mean you're going to win the prize. Just entering doesn't do it. You have to run, and you have to run to win. Philippians chapter 2. Paul uses this metaphor on several occasions. Philippians chapter 2. Verse 16. Holding fast the word of life, so that I may rejoice in the day of Christ, that I have not run in vain or labored in vain. And I wonder if the word of life could even be likened to the baton that a relay runner is holding. You know, was it the American relay team that dropped the baton 4 years ago and disqualified themselves? There are a lot of things you can do to disqualify yourself as a runner. False starts can disqualify you. Running in someone else's lane can disqualify you. Using illegal performance-enhancing drugs can disqualify. There are many things that can disqualify you from entering the race, running the race, or even winning the race. And Paul said he didn't want to run or labor in vain. That's why he held fast to the word of life, so that he could rejoice in the day of Christ, because that's the award ceremony. That's where you and I want to be. And that's where each of us needs to encourage the other one to be. And you see some of that in the Olympics, don't you? Even in the individual events, you see the winners congratulating other competitors. You see second and third place finishers congratulating the winners. Now, there are some exceptions to that. The men's 100 and 200 winner was not noted for that. He's a little bit of a showboat, but that's all part of the Olympics. But some of these comparisons fall short, and yet I want to emphasize that because you and I are in the race doesn't mean we are going to win the prize. Now, we all want to, and it's God's will that we do win the prize, but we're still in the race, and we still have perhaps one lap, perhaps two laps, perhaps several miles to go. We have to keep running, and we have to run to win. Notice verse 26, 1 Corinthians 9 again. Therefore, I run thus. Here's how I run my spiritual race, says Paul. Not with uncertainty. Well, I don't know about this, and I'm not sure about that, and I better save my energy. Maybe I better rest a while. Maybe I shouldn't be in this race. Maybe I should be in another one. No, you run with certainty and conviction and commitment. Look at the intensity in some of the slow-mo pictures, in particular some of these sprinters and some of the hurdlers. Can you imagine? It's hard enough running 400 meters, but put 12 hurdles or whatever the number might be out on the track. And clearing those hurdles, definitely another hurdle, another pressure point. Look at the intense expression, the pumping of the arms, the movement of the legs, leaning forward. I mean, if looks could kill, I mean, they're just intensely competitive. They are determined. They are single-minded. These are the things that Paul is trying to point out. These are the elements of Olympic athletes and their perspective on their commitment and their trade that Paul wants us to emulate as Christians in our race for the crown. He runs with confidence, not with uncertainty. Thus I fight. And of course, that's another sport that was frequented in the ancient Olympics. Is boxing still in the Olympics? I think it is, isn't it? It's never been my favorite to watch. Thus I fight, not as one who beats the air. Ask any boxer. I'm not a boxer, but I've talked to a few. I've watched a few over the years, but I can imagine a couple of things, all right? You know, have you ever seen a boxer working out? What is he punching? He's either punching a bag and it's going brrrr. I'd probably hit it once. It would knock me in the face. That'd be over. Or they're hitting this big punching bag thing that's hanging from the rafter. Boom, boom, boom. Have you ever seen a fighter punching the air? I got a good one there. That was a good boy. Look at that left hook. Did you feel the air pressure against my fist when I put it out there? Man, that was hard. I better take a break. Ridiculous. No, every movement counts. Every punch lands a powerful blow. We have an adversary. If we're punching the air, we'll never be prepared to confront our adversary. We'll never be competitive in the race if we don't recognize the need to prepare ourselves, to train, as we mentioned in point one, and then to run to win, not run to cross the finish line. We run to win. Only one wins the prize. You see, it's the energy that the first place runner exhibited that Paul wants all of us to exhibit. And now in our race, God willing, we're all going to win. That's God's desire. So that's where the analogy breaks down. But don't misunderstand God's intent. We all must run to win. There's only one prize. That's the way you run. That's the way these Olympic runners train and run. As if there's only one prize. That's a gold medal. Also, as I mentioned earlier, you've got to be aware of the rules, because you could be disqualified. 1 Corinthians 9, verse 27. But I discipline my body and bring it into subjection, lest when I have preached to others, I myself should become what? Disqualified. I myself should become disqualified. Once again, did Paul have in mind a disqualified athlete who trained and pushed themselves, however their discipline and activity was all for naught because they became disqualified? Wouldn't that be a depressing state of affairs? To train for 4 years and then be disqualified, either before the race, after the race, during the race. It's as though you never even showed up in 4 years of training. What did it get you? I mean, that's the human way of looking at things. Notice in Matthew 25, verse 30. See, great minds think alike. I'm complimenting Dana. We know the account. Dana revealed it to us. He discussed it. The talent Verse 26. Okay, I want you to run the race. I want you to multiply your talents. I want you to run to win. I want you to train and prepare. I want you to win the prize. Here's what you need. Get started. Well, two of them got started. The other one buried his, sat on the sidelines. Here's what he was described as being. Verse 26, you wicked and lazy servant. Matthew 25. You knew that I reap where I have not sown and gather where I have not scattered seed. I expect a return on my investment. I expect you to run to win. I expect you to finish the race. I expect you to win the prize. He didn't take it seriously. Verse 30. What happened to that unprofitable servant? He was cast into outer darkness where there was weeping and gnashing of teeth. And one almost sees that weeping and gnashing of teeth attitude on the part of those who fall short of the gold in the Olympics. I mentioned the Russian gymnast. There have been several others who simply collapse in absolute horror and total disappointment and frustration over their failure. And you think it's emotional to miss out on a medal at the Olympics? Think about missing out on the kingdom of God. Remember the parable of the rich man and Lazarus? Remember when Lazarus was there in the kingdom and the rich man was looking and seeing and there was a great gulf between them, and send Moses and the prophets to warn my brothers. I don't want to go there. I need a drink of water. He saw what was coming. He didn't run the race. So realize that just because you're in the race doesn't mean you're running. Just because you're in the race doesn't mean you're going to finish. You really have to push yourself. You have to train. You have to prepare. You have to do all the things the Olympic athletes are doing to get yourself ready. Because it is possible to lose this race. It's not a pleasant thing to consider. Hebrews chapter 12. Now, Paul was probably the author of Hebrews, but there's just enough question or doubt to make people speculate. He probably was, but there's a possibility that he wasn't. Let's put it this way. Most of the scholars that I've read have basically stated it this way. If any of the apostles and major writers of the New Testament wrote the book of Hebrews, of them all, it would have been Paul. That's the most likely one. But there are some issues and some phrasing and other circumstances in the book that kind of give you the idea that someone else might have been involved. But regardless, God inspired it. And here's another racing metaphor. And was it the Apostle Paul bringing this in again? Verse 1, chapter 12, Hebrews. Therefore, we also, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight. You know, see these sprinters? They're in very lightweight shorts and tops and lightweight shoes. They don't come out there in hiking boots with a 25-pound pack strapped to their back, two bags of granola, some energy bars, five bottles of water. No, they take all of that peripheral stuff off. They lighten up. They get down to whatever it takes. They lay aside every weight. Anything that will slow them down. Are we ready to do that? Are we doing it? We're supposed to run to win. And the sin which so easily ensnares us. And then, let us run with endurance the race that is set before us. You know, your race is not my race, is not his race, is not her race, is it? Some have the hurdle of health issues. Some have the hurdle of financial problems. Some have both those hurdles. Some seem to have no hurdles. But wait. Their hurdles are later in the race. Run the race that is set before you. And if you sit on the sidelines monitoring everybody else's race and wondering why theirs is so easy and yours is so hard, you're not in the race. You have to run your race. And you have to run it to the end. And you know what? As is usually the case, the end of the race is, in most cases, what? Harder than the beginning. Harder than the beginning. When do you run out of steam? At the end? Sometimes, no matter how hard you try and how much you train. When do you need the most steam? At the end. Now, physically speaking, our bodies weaken and decay and break down, and as we age, we lose our physical strength. But on the other hand, can we increase our spiritual strength? Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, bodily exercise profits what? A little, for a little time. But spiritual exercise, developing those gifts and talents that Dana was talking about, that will last you for all eternity. Are we there, running with endurance the race that is set before us? Do we look to Jesus, the author and the finisher of our faith, who, for the joy that was set before him, he ran his race? You think you've got a race to run? Think of the race Christ ran. Dead at age 34. Very difficult race. He's the captain of our salvation. He ran his race. And we are to run with endurance and determination the race that is set before us. Remember, most of us have been training for this race our whole lives too, haven't we? And for most of us, the majority of our lives. And we continue to train and we continue to run. Point three. Olympian athletes are highly motivated. Back to 1 Corinthians 9. They are highly motivated. What motivates them? The gold medal? Being declared the best in the world? The accolades of their fellow athletes and other human beings, incentives to sign to lucrative contracts, to make money. Of course, I'm not implying that any of this is necessarily evil. I'm saying there are tremendous incentives that highly motivate these athletes to sacrifice and to give their lives up. They are highly motivated. Well, notice what Paul mentions here in verse 25 about their motivation. And everyone who competes for the prize is temperate in all things. They manage their bodies and their health and their diet, etc., as we mentioned before. But notice here, now they do it to obtain a perishable crown. They go to extreme measures to gain this perishable crown. Golden medal that will decay. They do that for a perishable crown. Well, the implication is clear, isn't it? If they do that for a perishable crown, what are you and I willing to do for an imperishable crown that never deteriorates, that is so far greater than a golden medal around your neck? There is no comparison. So, isn't it clear what Paul expects of us? Shouldn't we be willing? Shouldn't we be motivated to sacrifice and to run in order to receive that golden crown of life? And when we dig deep toward the end of the race for more energy and more commitment and call upon God to grant us the gift and the power of His Spirit to allow us to endure to the end, is that where we are? Calling out for more strength and more energy to finish the race? Or are we asking for a bench and a cold drink of water so we can sit this one out? Well, it's easy to do. Praying for God's Spirit to motivate us as we near the finish line is very important. And you know, we might be very near the finish line. Whether that's the end time events or the end of our physical lives. But on the other hand, by the same token, we might have several other laps remaining. But we must run to win, and we must run the race that is set before us. In Matthew 6, verse 33, another familiar verse, "Seek you first the kingdom of God and His righteousness, and all of these things will be added unto you." These Olympic athletes seek the gold medal and the accolades of men. We are to seek the kingdom of God first. And there are so many other parallels that we could mention. But I hope that these three elements that we've discussed this morning, the importance of training and preparation, the concept of running to win, and the need to get motivated and stay motivated no matter how long your race lasts, no matter what kind of race you are asked to run. Those three elements, I hope, are lessons that we can take from the metaphor that Paul used here in 1 Corinthians 9. So how are you running your race? It's a fitting question as the Olympics conclude this Sunday. It's a question we should all ask and answer, and I pray that all of us will continue to run the race that is set before us.